Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, appropriately enough, Michael Cutler. Always great to join you, catch up with you at the end of the week, and try to sort out all the madness that has been going on this previous week. Today is March 18th, 2016. Spring in the air, but a snowstorm may be on the way, but that kind of seems to be how the world is these days. Those of you who are familiar with me know that I'm a retired senior special agent with the former Immigration and Naturalization Service, the INS. Today, that mission is supposed to be conducted by ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and a subdivision, and only this administration could do this, called HSI, Homeland Security Investigations. I have a pet theory that they came up with the name HSI to remove the word immigration out of the title of the agency. God forbid we should secure our borders or enforce our immigration laws. You cannot make this stuff up. But in any event, my mission ever since 9/11 has been to try to inform, educate as many of our fellow Americans, as many of our supposed political leaders as possible, about the true significance of immigration, of border security, about how to make America safe. And in conjunction with that, I write for a bunch of websites I'd love for you to all check out. Of course, my own personal website is Michael Cutler, one word, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. For many years now, I'm very proud to have been associated with a terrific organization out on the West Coast, located, as they say, in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California, CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. It's a mouthful, but the acronym is much easier. It's CAPSWeb.org, C-A-P-S, CAPSWeb.org. I write for them. I've been writing for them for years, where I joined a bunch of other great writers who specialize in various aspects of the impact, if you will, of immigration, environmental factors, all sorts of things. And so, again, it's great to be able to join them and work with them, as I have been doing for a bunch of years as a senior fellow. CAPSWeb.org recently wrote about the need for journalists to be honest. We'll talk a little bit about that. But also I write for Front Page Magazine. I write for The Social Contract. The Social Contract has a couple of articles worth looking at. It's a quarterly publication. The summer edition, they gave me the lead story, or I wrote the lead story about looking back 14 years after 9/11 and where we are today in terms of immigration, national security, the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission, to which, by the way, I provided testimony. And Front Page Magazine, I have to tell you, the David Horowitz Freedom Center does a magnificent job of providing commentary, perspectives on a host of conservative issues. I am a middle-of-the-road kind of guy. I'm registered as a Democrat. It's remarkable to me that I don't think I can point a finger at a single time when a Democratic organization invited me to speak. But I have to tell you that I routinely invited by Tea Party groups and Republican Party groups around the United States, in New Jersey, in Kansas, all over the place. Kind of remarkable. I don't know what in the world has happened to the party with which I am registered, but I think the wheels have come off the Democratic Party. But I'd rather fight than switch, as the old television cigarette commercial used to say, those of you old enough to remember when they used to be able to advertise cigarettes on television. I'm glad they don't, by the way, anymore. But I would absolutely rather fight than switch. We've got to get the political parties to go back to their roots and represent their traditional constituents. Both parties are failing abysmally because both parties have been bribed. They've been bought and paid for. It's outrageous. Campaign contributions, in my judgment, are nothing more than legal bribes, and they are huge. Police officers, federal agents, we can't take a penny from anybody. Can't take a cup of coffee, God forbid. Internal Affairs, they'd camp outside your house. And rightfully so. We're supposed to be objective. So isn't it remarkable that if, as a federal agent, I took a gift, I took a cup of coffee, whatever, I'd be in a world of hurt. But politicians who actually write the laws and establish the policies and decide whether or not to fund programs, you know, the law means nothing without funding. An architect can draw up the most beautiful plans in the world for the most beautiful building in the world, but if there's no money and there are no construction workers to bring that plan to life, it sits in the bottom of a drawer. So Congress does both. They pass the laws, the blueprints, if you will, and then they are responsible for the appropriations of money to see to it that laws are enforced and administered, and that the job of the people of the American citizens is done. So they have both sides of the equation, the blueprints and the costs, and they take money hand over fist for the most part. If you don't think they're influenced by that money, wow, check for a flatline EEG because you're probably brain dead. So anyway, getting back to the issue, wrote as an article, and I want to talk about that this evening. I want to lead off because word came today, it was great news, that one of the architects of the recent series of attacks in Paris, one of the key architects, had just been captured. And so, again, terrorism on the front page. And you know, this comes back to an issue. And I'm sitting here, and those of you who are familiar with me know that I don't have a script, per se. I just kind of like to sit down in front of the microphone and discuss with you what's most important in the news, especially from the perspective of national security. And recently, I wrote an article about how the pollsters, basically, for the most part, are full of fertilizer. You know, I've taken polls. We've all been subjected to them, and they're fatally flawed, and sometimes I wonder if it's because the pollsters are inept or because they're corrupt and they have an agenda. But think about the poll that I recently took where they said, what is the most important challenge facing America in your judgment? Is it the threat of terrorism? Is it the economy and unemployment? Is it the disaster with health care? Is it immigration? So I was going to click on two things. I mean, you could click on all the above, but I was going to click on terrorism and immigration. So I clicked on terrorism, and then when I went to click on immigration, the check went off the terrorism, you know, the way the box has that little mark on there when you click on it, and now immigration was the lead issue. And it angered me so much, and I said, you know, I need to write about this. So I did. I wrote about this for Front Page Magazine, again, sponsored by the David Horowitz Freedom Center. And I said, this is not a reasonable poll. And look at how the polls, rather than reflect the will of the people, which supposedly is why they do it, right, the name of the game, figure out what the American people want, the polls, folks, isn't reflecting the will of the people, but altering and modifying perceptions about the will of the people. And in politics, let's not forget that perceptions become reality. So just a couple days ago, the folks at Fox News on the set, journalists, they're nice people. I'm sure they're smart, but maybe not that smart. And Britt Hume was on. And he says, I don't understand the Donald Trump phenomenon. Immigration, immigration, immigration. That's all he talks about, immigration, immigration. He went on. And he said, and yet all the polls that we look at say that fewer, I forgot what the number was, fewer than 12% of all Americans think immigration's a big deal. And I got to tell you, my head started to spin like a gyroscope. I mean, I know that they put spin on the topics and on the coverage. That statement was so outrageous, and I want you to think about what happens here. I didn't take the poll, the survey, by the way. At that point, I said, I've had it. I'm not getting involved with this corrupt system. And for the most part, I think the pollsters have a make-believe profession anyway. I think a lot of it is just a lot of junk that they put out there as filler on the network, so they put somebody in front of a camera. But I said, here's the problem. If you look at what the 9/11 Commission had to say, and I provided testimony to the commission, immigration was the key issue, period. Period, period, period. End of sentence. Immigration. If the terrorists could not have entered the United States, they could not have attacked us. In fact, basically, that sentence appears in the preface of the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. You know, it might be obvious to say that terrorists can't attack us if they can't get here. Words to that effect. That's immigration. Immigration is supposed to make certain that any person that seeks entry into the United States is inspected, and the purpose of the inspection is to keep people out of the country who pose a threat to our safety or well-being. It has nothing to do with being Latino. All the lies and all the nonsense and all the race baiting that we hear about. You know, I was with the INS for 30 years. For the first 4 years of my career, starting in 1971, I was an immigration inspector assigned to Kennedy International Airport. There was nothing in the regulations that said keep out the Latinos, keep out brown skin. That's lunacy. That is outrageously wrong. That is not the least bit as to what this is about. But if you listen to the media, and when I do speaking events around the country, and by the way, if you become aware of any opportunities, speaking events, let me know. You can reach me through michaelcutler.net. Wherever I go, I'll say to people, do you think the immigration laws treat Latinos differently? There are many people who say, yes, we assume that's the case. Folks, that's racism. It's bigotry. It's profiling. It's disgusting, and it doesn't exist. The grounds for excluding an alien, very simple. I'll tell you what they are, and they can be found under Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182. Everything we do is codified. It's in the law. Unless Mr. Obama, with his magic pen, and I'd like to tell him where he could hide it when he's not using it, and his telephone that I wish he would sit on, countermands our laws. It's outrageous. This constitutional professor, lecturer, whatever he purports to be, knows darn well that what he's doing runs contrary to the Constitution. He took an oath that said he would defend the Constitution, that he would uphold the laws of the land. I took a similar oath as an agent. And, you know, the laws aren't the menu. It's not like going into a restaurant and saying to the waiter, I'll have soup but not salad. It doesn't work that way. You sign on for the whole slate or not at all. Either you can, in good conscience, enforce the laws or you cannot. It's not up to the agent to say, well, I don't like that law, I'm not going to bother with it. Similarly, we expect that the executive branch, and the word executive means they execute the law. They're the ones that are supposed to make it happen. When he talks about, you know, prosecutorial discretion, no, it's prosecutorial deception. It's one thing to say we don't have the resources, we're going to limit who we go after. It's something else to give people authority to work in the United States and remain in the United States, even though there is no justification under the law. It undermines national security. It undermines the ability of Americans to find decent jobs. It's amazing. And I've written an article, and that should be out soon, where Obama talked about wage insurance. Go back and look it up in the State of the Union this past year, wage insurance. When people lose their job, and even when they're retrained, if the new employer doesn't pay as much as the old employer, the government should be giving them wage insurance. This is an intentional destruction of the middle class to make more people dependent on the government so that more people will do what the government tells them. It's about control. People that become leaders in government, or perhaps elsewhere as well, are control freaks. It's not enough that they get to do what they want. That's called freedom. They need to impose themselves on everybody else. Not only will I do what I want, but you're going to do what I want. You know? So there's a real problem in terms of what the idea of freedom is, and a president who doesn't understand or does understand and doesn't give a rat's tail about the Constitution. So that's where we are right now. But so we get caught into the situation where you've got a president doing what he's doing. You've got pollsters who twist the perceptions about what Americans want, and that drives the conversation and the actions of government off the cliff. That's why we have the problems that we have. There's such a lack of honesty by everybody involved, the politicians, the journalists, and so forth. So these pollsters take the poll, and you click on, I'm most concerned about terrorism, and they're ignoring the fact, the obvious fact, that immigration had an integral role to play with terrorism. And anyway, I started giving you the grounds for exclusion, so let me just finish up the grounds of exclusion so you'll understand what the law is about. It's aliens who were previously deported, aliens who have serious communicable diseases, aliens who are severely mentally ill and are prone to violence or are sex offenders, criminals, aliens who are drug dealers, gun runners, gang members, murderers, arsonists, that sort of thing. Then we get to aliens who are human rights violators, war criminals, spies, and terrorists. And then we get to aliens who would likely become a public charge because they don't have the financial wherewithal to sustain themselves while they're in the United States as a non-immigrant. And finally, aliens who, if they worked, would likely either displace an American or become part of a labor pool that would drive down the wages and working conditions of Americans who are similarly employed. That's the law. There's nothing in it about being Latino, about green or purple or have yellow polka dots, nothing of the sort. But if you look at the way the pollsters do things, if you listen to the statements of so many politicians, how do we appeal to the Latino voter? As though they're somehow different. And when they talk about the Latino voter, and I've written about this as well, this is a disgusting form of profiling because all they're looking at is the person's ethnicity. You know, if a police officer stopped somebody for being a Latino and they said, why'd you stop him? And he said, he was a Latino. That cop would probably not only lose his job, but might be prosecuted for violating civil rights. Think about it. The black voter. Yeah, you see one black, you've seen them all. The Jewish voter, the same deal. The evangelical. You know, this cubbyholing of Americans serves to put one American against the other. This is a basement brawl, you know, a no-holds-barred brawl. And who's instigating it are the politicians and the pollsters. We want to appeal to the Latino voter, so you've got to open up the borders and let millions of people charge the border and give them citizenship so everybody whose last name is Rodriguez will vote for that politician. That is a level of madness that I don't even know how to begin to talk about it intelligently without screaming at the top of my lungs. I mean, what are they saying? And you know, so then you come away with the idea that anybody who has a last name that even sounds Latino is probably an illegal alien, maybe from Mexico. That's not what it's about. How many Americans are from Puerto Rico? Puerto Rico is part of America. If you were born in Puerto Rico, you are as American as I am. And I was born in New York. How many multi-generational Americans can trace ancestry five generations back, perhaps, to Mexico or Argentina or Guatemala? So they have a Latino last name. They're as American as anybody. How despicable is that? So you meet some guy and you say, what's your name? He said, oh, I'm Juan Rodriguez. Oh, and where are you from? And Juan Rodriguez is fifth-generation American. Maybe his grandfather died fighting the Second World War. Maybe his father was killed or wounded in the Vietnam War. And this guy may have just come back from doing his third tour in Afghanistan with the Marine Corps. But as soon as you hear Juan Rodriguez, uh-oh, who's this guy? This is the damage that is being done, ripping our country apart, pitting American against American, making people feel uncomfortable in their own country. That if people know that they have a Latino name, maybe they're in trouble. You know, we saw this with Jewish people. How many people came here after the Holocaust and they knew that with the name of Schwartz or Goldstein, people would say, oh, the guy's a Jew, and there was anti-Semitism. So suddenly they changed their names. This has to stop. Latinos are, if they're American, they're American. If they're not American, they're not. This is not about the Latino vote. And there are so many Latinos who approach me in my travels around the country and say to me that they are furious beyond words, especially people who legally immigrated. They say to me, you know, Mr. Cutler, I waited in my country for 5 years to get that green card, and I finally get it, and I come here, and now what am I finding? That people are charging into this country, and they're getting everything for free, and they don't wait online, and it has no value to them. And he said, for me, when I finally got that visa packet and I got on that airplane, it was like winning the lottery, and what they have done now is so devalue it. You know, I drive into the city frequently to do TV appearances, not so frequently anymore, but I had been. See, TV is part of this too, because many of the TV networks have multilingual stations. So they don't want people that speak foreign languages to leave, because the more people that click the dial and listen to their programs or watch their programs, the more they can charge for airtime, for commercials. This is all about money. The hell with America, the hell with Americans, show me the money. You know, show me the money. But how many people have I spoken to who drive those cars who maybe were immigrants? They came from China. They came from Russia. They came from Latin America, the four corners of the earth. And that's the other point. All immigrants aren't from Latin America. In fact, legally, guess which country sends us more people who get green cards than any other country on the planet right now? You may be shocked to know it's China. It has nothing to do with Latin America. But almost every time I get in the back of a car that is sent for me to pick me up, whether it's Uber or limo or whatever, many times the driver will say to me, you know, I came here 15 years ago. I came here 20 years ago. I came here 22 years ago. If America was like it is today when I first came here, I wouldn't have come here. I had one guy from China tell me that he had a couple of his own children now attending high school. And he said, China is doing better by its people than America is doing for its people. And China is a communist country, totalitarian country in many ways. We are wrecking our country because the politicians in Washington from both parties are so corrupt, so driven to get more money, that they forgot who they're supposed to represent. For all the screaming about one party versus the other party, I call them the repugnant cans and the Democrats. Both parties suck, to put it bluntly. I don't know how to use polite language when I talk about these crooks. You know, I have sat at congressional hearings where I wanted to scream at the people that were in attendance, the members of Congress. Not all of them. There are some good guys. Senator Jeff Sessions, Senator Chuck Grassley, Senator David Vitter, who I understand isn't running for re-election, sadly, because I think David Vitter has been doing a great job. My good friend Congressman Lou Barletta from Pennsylvania. I was just on the phone with Lou a couple days ago, and we were actually texting each other this morning. Doing a great job. Steve King, trying his damnedest. And the funny thing is, I'm mentioning all Republicans, I'm registered as a Democrat, because I don't give a rat's tail about the political parties. I wish both parties would evaporate and go away. America would be far better if the parties disappeared. If we simply had people go to Washington and represent their constituents. Those parties, as far as I'm concerned, if you could turn me loose with a bunch of my colleagues or former colleagues, we could put together a racketeering investigation and put people in jail for what they've done to this country, what they've done to Americans, and how many lives have been taken. But they don't care. When an American dies, it's collateral damage. We spend a ton of money, and I wrote about this for capsweb.org. We spend a ton of money to manufacture, produce weapons that minimize civilian casualties overseas. And in the military jargon, a civilian casualty is collateral damage. I want to know what nitwit comes up with this terminology, collateral damage. You know, we got to, you know, so sterilize the language that we don't even know what we're talking about. Collateral damage. That's dead civilians, collateral damage. You got to love the euphemisms, collateral damage. To minimize collateral damage, we've come up with weapons where we can shoot a cruise missile thousands of miles and aim it at a particular window in a particular building on a particular street corner, so that we generally don't have to do the carpet bombing we saw in World War II. You know, we started, our Air Force created a firestorm in Germany when we were fighting against the Nazis. We had no choice. You know, we just it's actually started a storm with all the updrafts and everything else. It became a meteorological phenomenon, and they gave it the term firestorm because it literally was self-feeding because the temperatures were so high. Today, one cruise missile into the window, bango, it takes out the bad guys and all of his cohorts. Very surgical. We're careful. Don't want to hurt civilians. Can't do that. And I agree with it, by the way. That's ideal. However, every single day, American citizens are dying in their own country because of people who should not be here. And the administration could not care less. And many politicians could not care less. There was a hearing held this past Wednesday by the Homeland Security Committee in the Congress. My friend Lou Barletta was one of the people who participated in the hearing. And he raised some issues that I'm going to raise with you this evening. But that's not a shocker. Lou is just a tremendous representative for all of us. But what's so remarkable is that during the course of the hearing, Lamar Smith, who used to chair the Immigration Subcommittee, former chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, I've worked with Lamar over the years, not so much lately, but I've testified for him. We've had many private meetings in the past. And he was asking about these criminal aliens who were released by the administration. And, of course, immediately you hear, well, there are certain aliens that they can't get a passport for. And there was a Supreme Court decision called Zadvydas. That was the name of a particular alien. And the Supreme Court said you cannot hold an alien for more than 6 months if it would appear that there's no reasonable prospect of ultimately deporting the alien. Except if the alien is involved in national security issues or has established this track record where it can be shown that he's prone to extreme violence. And there's a couple of other conditions. The administration conveniently leaves that out. So you have a guy who's a murderer, who's killed people. You can't release him. You know, he did jail time and now we tried to deport him and his home country says, we're not giving you a passport. We don't know who this guy is. Whatever the excuse is, well, we can't release him because of Zadvydas. No, that's not true. Some people can be held indefinitely. If they cannot be deported, there's no reason to put them back on the street where they're going to kill and rape and maim more innocent victims. And then, so Lamar Smith asked how many aliens had been released, and Jay Johnson gave the numbers, you know, 3 years ago we released, whatever, 30,000, and then last year it was so many, and this year it's even fewer, so we're doing better. And but we've got the problem with those that we can't get passports for. And Lamar Smith said to him, that's only 2,000 people that fall under that ruling. And you're talking tens of thousands of aliens. He never got an answer to that question. Now, I want you all to understand this. There was a memo that was out recently, and a report that was issued, where a couple of hundred people have been killed by criminal aliens who were released, and subsequent to being released, killed more people. This is outrageous. Wouldn't it be wonderful if this administration was as concerned about collateral damage where it involves people inside the United States as it involves foreign civilians overseas? Americans die. You hear about the occasional case. Kate Steinle was a case in point. It made the headlines because she was a gorgeous young lady in the prime of her life. Had everything going for her, and her life was snuffed out by a dirtbag who had been deported several times before, picks up a gun, and whammo, she's dead. Dies in her father's arms. I can't even imagine. You know, I'm a parent. I have a daughter. I have, you know, several children, but I have a daughter. I mean, the story kept me awake at night for days. Out of nothing, she's with her dad in a touristy part of San Francisco, if you remember the story. And minding her own business, you know. She wasn't some kid looking for drugs in a tough neighborhood. She was down at Fisherman's Wharf, right in the seaport area. It's a tourist area. She went out to have dinner with her father. And she winds up dead, dying in her father's arms. Made the headlines. But what you don't know, what the newspapers and what the reporters aren't telling you, is cases like that are playing out multiple times every bloody day, 365 days out of the year in towns and cities from coast to coast and border to border. But Steinle was gorgeous. Somebody picked up on it. It made the headlines. If she wasn't so pretty, if she was whatever, you know, okay, wouldn't have made the headlines. You don't know about it. Which brings me to the article that I wrote for capsweb.org about the need for journalists to be honest. They manipulate the language. You know, these great schools of journalism, and I just did a radio interview with a young lady from Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism, and my degree was in communications, which is an adjunct to journalism. I had actually thought of becoming a broadcast journalist had I not become a federal agent. And in both cases, the professions, as I point out in my article, are very similar. Journalists and agents are fact finders. For a journalist, the purpose to getting the facts is to do a story or to write a book or an expose. Think about Woodward and Bernstein with Watergate, a few good men, all the president's men. You know, and it actually brought down the Nixon administration, the break-in at Watergate. Boy, if that got them torqued, what Mr. Obama has done, I can't even begin to wrap my brain around it. But in any event, they gathered their facts. They wrote this series of articles in the Washington Post, and that was the end of the Nixon administration. They gathered the facts to write a story. For an agent, you gather the facts to hopefully get an indictment, to be able to arrest people, to be able to take criminal organizations and put them out of business, to thwart terrorists from doing what they're doing, and to restore or maintain law and order throughout our society. That's why we have law enforcement officers. But it starts with the facts. But you see, in accumulating the facts, the words, the language has to be objective. And yet Jimmy Carter, I would argue, Obama's dementor, turned around and said, oh, immigration agents can no longer use the word illegal alien. This goes back to the 70s. And we've been stuck with that ever since. The journalists picked up on it. They're immigrants. They're undocumented. Alien is looked at as though you're uttering the dreaded N-word. You know, if you go to Section 1101 in Title 8, was Section 101 of the actual Immigration and Nationality Act. Section 101 lists definitions. You can't enforce laws if you don't define what we're dealing with. They have the same thing with the narcotics laws. They have to define what drugs are. With firearms for ATF, you have to define what a firearm is. So it starts with definitions. Words are critical. Words are pivotal. Words form the foundation for everything. You know, the old question, what's mightier, the pen or the sword? It's the pen, especially when you look at how this president wields it with great abandon and in violation, in my judgment, of the Constitution. But so the point of the matter is, the term alien is defined in the law. And the definition for the word alien is any person, not a citizen or national of the United States. That's the definition. There's no insult. There's nothing pejorative about that term. It doesn't say, oh, these are idiots. These are people who smell bad. These are people who are dumb. These are people who are immoral. No. It simply says you are not a citizen of the United States and you're present within our borders. You are an alien. And the same thing is true about Americans. When we travel overseas, you go to another country, we become aliens. This isn't an insult. It's a statement of reality. But by changing that one word, and this isn't about political correctness. I keep making this point. This is about being Orwellian. We've developed newspeak. English is not spoken here. Newspeak is spoken here. You know, you go into a store, Spanish spoken here, English spoken. Well, they need to hold up a sign when you come into America at a port of entry. This is Orwellian. This is about modifying language to alter perceptions. And remember, perceptions become reality. So by saying immigrant, then, and you hear it on the news all the time, Donald Trump is anti-immigrant. No, he's not. I've listened to what Trump has to say. And he's made it clear. I am against illegal aliens sneaking into the United States. And that's why he wants to build a fence, which is fine, except we have 50 border states, not just 4 border states, and nearly half of all illegal aliens. You know, and if you know what I've been writing, and you've been listening to my program, this is an old story, but we are a nation of 50 border states. the terrorists, in point of fact, came in not by running the border, but by entering through international airports. But what Trump is saying, I think, is pretty clear. And I'm not speaking on behalf of Trump, but he said, I don't want people coming here illegally. And you see, it's not a minor point, because we spend almost $14 billion a year on the Customs and Border Protection side of the Department of Homeland Surrender, as I call DHS. We have the Border Patrol. Their job is to make sure people don't sneak in past the ports of entry. And we have 328 ports of entry. And at each port of entry, we have Customs and Border Protection inspectors. We used to have Immigration and Customs inspectors, so now they've combined because of the way they restructured everything. And their job is to keep out the aliens who fall into those categories of exclusion that I mentioned earlier. That's the bottom line. Now, if it doesn't matter how you come here, if running the border is fine, if stowing away on an airplane and sneaking in the dead of night is okay, well, if you think it's okay, get your head examined. But if that's the case, if our government says, we don't care how you come here anymore, forget about Ellis Island, forget about what the law says, come on down, you know, come on down, it's great, then why don't we just get rid of the Border Patrol and get rid of the inspectors at ports of entry and stop the charade that we're going to inspect people getting off of international airline flights? You know, when they do speaking events, sometimes people say to me, oh, this is about the Latinos. And I say, no, we have plenty of people other than Mexican, OTMs, who come in through the Mexican and the Canadian border and stowing away on ships, and we're supposed to do something about it. If we're not willing to deal with that problem and punish people who evade the inspections process that in part is supposed to keep terrorists and criminals out of our country, then would you feel comfortable if from now on we shut down the inspections process, and when an airplane lands in the United States, let's say it comes from Kingston, Jamaica, let's say it comes from Karachi, Pakistan, let's say it comes from Paris, France, Brussels, you know, where they have lots of ISIS characters running loose, all over Europe, in fact, if someone comes in from Canada, wherever, is it okay with you that we're just not going to inspect them anymore? Tell them, just take your bag and go where you're going, the way we would with a flight that comes into the Kennedy Airport from Chicago or from Los Angeles. Take your bag and go. Either you agree that that's reasonable, or you understand why we're supposed to secure the border. I mean, this influx of heroin that we're seeing across the country is the result of open borders. And it's not just the drugs, because drug trafficking organizations don't just mail boxes of heroin into the United States at UPS. They send in a whole team of people that distribute it, people who are the enforcers and kill those people who get in the way of the operation, people who are the money people. It's like a car dealership is what I compare it to. You got the car salesman, and you got the mechanics, and you got the money people, and so forth. Well, that's what this is like. This is big business. This is big business. And very often, the leaders of the cartel show up in the Forbes, you know, 500 wealthiest people in the world list, or the 100 wealthiest. This is a business to them. So either we're going to secure the borders against unlawful entry, or we're not. And to say, well, this is anti-immigrant, this is where journalists, instead of reporting on the news, are twisting public opinion in an Orwellian fashion. And that's something that we need to be very alarmed about. Because when you can no longer have an honest discussion, you have tyranny. That's the point. In a time of universal deception, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. That's not my statement. That's George Orwell's statement. And this is a time of universal deceit. And we see it with the pollsters, we see it with the journalists, and we're seeing it with the politicians. So instead of saying accurately, people that want our immigration laws enforced are pro-enforcement, and the other people are you know, I don't know, anti-enforcement, if we're going to do pro and anti, you know, and the abortion issue, you have pro-life versus pro-choice. Nobody is anti. It's not anti-choice, anti-life. No, pro-choice, pro-life. Why can't they say pro-enforcement or pro-immigration anarchy, perhaps? I understand what they're doing. This isn't by accident. And people say, well, we're being politically correct. No, we are being manipulated, and we are now speaking newspeak. This isn't English, this is newspeak. And the idea behind newspeak in George Orwell's novel 1984 was that if you eliminate the words, you eliminate the thoughts. So if we could get people to stop thinking about the difference between an illegal alien versus a lawful immigrant, then anybody who says we can't let the whole world come here becomes anti-immigrant. And of course, Americans are decent people. And then the accusation starts with xenophobia and all this other nonsense. Donald Trump is a terrible racist and bigot, and we're hearing it from both political parties. And I believe the Republicans are dying to get Hillary elected, the main core Republican leadership. Not the people, the leaders. I believe John Boehner would be much happier if Hillary won than if Donald Trump won. Because he knows he can do business with Hillary. She's open borders, he's open borders. He's with Chamber of Commerce, so is she. And for all the screaming that Hillary does, do you know that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has partnered with the Clinton Foundation? But she screams about the billionaires and the gazillionaires. You see, for all the screaming, guess where she's getting her money from? Guess who her friends are? And it's Zuckerberg, and it's Gates, and it's all of these nitwits that as wealthy as they are, and these people are billionaires. Gates is the richest man on the planet. He still needs more. He's like a malignant tumor that's in an insatiable feeding frenzy, has an insatiable appetite for wealth the way that a tumor has an insatiable appetite for nutrients. Gobble it all up. He's like a damn Pac-Man. Gobble, 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 gobble. Can't have enough. And what it's doing is destroying the middle class. It's undermining national security. It's providing foreign workers with access to our computer network, so we have all these issues with hacking. What are we doing? This is suicidal. And then, speaking of suicidal, I want to come to this most recent story that was just posted earlier today on Front Page Magazine. I hope you go to Front Page and check this one out. And here's the title. Are DHS leaders seeking an MVP award from ISIS? MVP, of course, most valuable player award from ISIS. The tagline, the day after the San Bernardino terror attack, why exactly did USCIS managers block a team of ICE agents from entering their facility? Can you imagine anything more outrageous than that? You know, it's hard for me to believe it. And I got a call from a good friend who's inside the agency who told me that this had happened. And I said, wow, that's kind of hard to imagine. I mean, how in the world does that happen and why did that happen? Well, as a matter of fact, what you should know is it did happen because there was a hearing this past week on March 15th in the Senate, and the hearing was conducted by the Senate Homeland Security Committee, chaired by Chairman Ron Johnson. And so Ron Johnson went berserk because he had gotten an allegation that ICE agents showed up at a USCIS facility the day after San Bernardino looking for the guy who provided the weapons to these two dead terrorists. He was scheduled to be there with his wife for an interview because he had filed an application to give his wife a green card. They were refused entry. The guy who provided the guns to the terrorists, allegedly. Let's be careful. Allegedly. Let me read this to you. This is the news release from Senator Johnson. Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee Chairman Ron Johnson, Republican from Wisconsin, revealed the lack of coordination between United States Citizenship and Immigration Services, USCIS, and Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, during an incident at the San Bernardino USCIS office the day after the terrorist attack in San Bernardino, California. Now, I want you to understand, this would have been insane if this happened in New York, but this is down the road from where people were killed by terrorists. And by the way, as a matter of routine, when I was an ICE agent, if I walked into the office where the adjudications were done and said, I need to see a file on a case that you have, no one said, oh, we need to know exactly what you're doing and why we need to show you the file. They would just hand you the file because we were both working for immigration. And the whole point is to make certain that there's no fraud. Fraud by itself is a felony. It's a 5-year felony. But if the fraud is perpetrated in conjunction with terrorism, it's a 25-year felony. This is serious stuff. This is like an IRS agent saying, I have an open investigation and I want to see Joe Schmidlap's IRS return. And they say, oh, we're sorry, you can't see it. That's crazy. That's beyond crazy. So you have agents who, at the behest of the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force, show up and USCIS throws them out and says, no, you can't come in. They said, we need to see the immigration file. The guy turned out to not show up that day. I wonder why. They refused to give him the file. The only thing that apparently they gave them was a photograph of the guy. But, I mean, this is absolutely remarkable. Let me just finish reading this press release. Homeland Security Investigations, HSI, remember I said this is actually a division of ICE, were alerted by the FBI that Enrique Marquez, who supplied the weapons that Syed Farouk and Tashfeen Malik used to carry out the attacks in San Bernardino on December 2, 2015, was scheduled for an immigration hearing at USCIS in San Bernardino on December 3, 2015, together with his wife. According to an HSI memo from earlier this year, when HSI agents arrived at the USCIS office to detain Marquez, the USCIS denied the HSI agent's entry into the building and later refused to provide relevant immigration documents to HSI. Johnson, reading from the memo, said during the hearing at approximately 12 p.m. on December 3rd, the FBI informed HSI and the Joint Terrorism Task Force that FBI field interview agents learned that Marquez and his wife, Maria Chernik, were scheduled for a meeting at U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services in San Bernardino for noon on December 3rd. HSI contacted the HSI special agent requesting a team of armed agents to respond to the San Bernardino USCIS office in order to detain Marquez until an FBI interview team could be dispatched. The special agent informed the HSI team that the officer in charge of USCIS would not let HSI agents in the building. The special agent learned that Marquez and Chernik did not show up for their meeting. The special agent requested copies of the A file, that's the immigration file, in which USCIS refused. The special agent was allowed to take a copy of Chernik's photo contained within the A file. The director of USCIS, the hearing that Johnson held, and said, unfortunately, all happened so quickly that it was incorrectly perceived that our folks were trying in some way to obstruct what ICE was trying to do. Do we need to look at our protocols to make sure these misunderstandings don't occur? That is something we may well need to do. That's a lie. If Mr. Rodriguez was standing here right now, I would tell him what kind of a liar he is and recommend that he start telling the truth. Because this isn't the first time this sort of thing has happened. And in fact, the very next day, Johnson issues another statement. The next day, warning that they must not retaliate against the whistleblowers. Because apparently, USCIS, DHS, found out that agents had spoken to members of the Senate and told them what happened, and now they were looking to hunt for their scalps. So don't tell me there's any contrition coming out of Rodriguez's mouth. You know, that guy, as far as I'm concerned, can attempt an anatomical impossibility. So Johnson had to say to them to not reprisals. And here's what Johnson says. I'm concerned that ICE is attempting to identify and retaliate against whistleblowers who revealed a lack of cooperation between USCIS and ICE in the aftermath of the terror attack in San Bernardino. ICE has a track record of retaliating against whistleblowers, as in the case of Homeland Security Investigations agent Taylor Johnson. Johnson, by the way, was doing an investigation into the treaty investor visas, the so-called EB-5 visas, where an alien gets a green card for investing $500,000 in a company, hires, I believe it's 10 or 12 people. I have to check the numbers. I don't want to mislead you. So it turned out that there were some people high up in government who were involved. A leading member of Congress, his son or son-in-law, was the attorney for one of these law firms under investigation. The law firm was involved with arranging the visas. And when Taylor Johnson refused to cease and desist her investigation because she saw where this was going and said, wait a minute, there's serious violations of law here. First they suspended her, they ultimately fired her. Now we come back again to the fact that the 9/11 Commission made it clear that visa fraud and immigration benefit fraud were key vulnerabilities that terrorists had repeatedly exploited. I did my first hearing 4.5 years before 9/11 about the visa fraud problem and the problem with the adjudications program where there were fraud in the benefits program, which is what USCIS does, United States Citizenship and Immigration Services. On a personal note, I testified before a caucus hearing, Immigration Reform Caucus hearing, November 2001, just a couple of weeks after 9/11, without permission. I was removed as an agent the very next day. Ostensibly, it was because I have an injured knee. And I offered to stay on. I said, look, yes, I've got an injured leg, so I'm not going to chase people. But goodness, I was a senior special agent. I was the immigration agent assigned to DEA Unified Intelligence for about 4 years. And I offered to my bosses, I said, you know what, I could work for you as an intelligence officer, as a training officer, because there was talk at that point about creating this Leviathan DHS, where customs agents were going to be folded into immigration. I said, I'd be happy to become a training agent. You know, you don't need to chase anybody. I'm able to get around, walking lengthy periods of time or running. I'm not doing that. I can't, unfortunately. I've had knee surgery. I'll probably need more. But I don't want to sit home. I want to be productive. I want to, you know, have a dog in the hunt. I could be a prosecution liaison officer working between our agents and the U.S. Attorney's Office. Whatever I offered to do was turned down. Why? Because I dared to speak the truth before Congress. You know, I didn't go to Russia, you know, and like Snowden, and oh no, you know, and I never divulged information I wasn't supposed to. I simply said there are failures within the immigration system. And that was enough to put me on the enemies list. This is not the way the government is supposed to be operating, folks. And so we have Citizenship and Immigration Services denying agents working on an active terrorism investigation. Think about that. The day after that attack, no one even knew if more attacks were coming. Were there more people out there? The FBI desperately wanted to get their hands on this guy, Marquez, to find out if he knew anything. And you have USCIS running interference on a terrorism investigation? And I want to remind you that it's USCIS that would implement any massive amnesty program or legalization program. You know, we're hearing Kasich say, oh, I see the face of God in the faces of illegal aliens. Really? I mean, this is a guy that needs help if that's what he sees. I see vulnerabilities, folks. You can't defend a country when you have millions of foreign nationals inside your country with no way of knowing who the hell they are and why they are actually here. And to provide them with lawful status, knowing damn well that there would not be any interviews, no field investigations. We would just be giving people identity documents on their word. This is so delusional that I have to question the mental stability of anybody who could recommend that that's a reasonable course of action, even as we are continually reminded that we have never been at a higher risk for a terrorist attack than we are today. and no one's going to lose their job at USCIS, I promise you. I assure you that Mr. Obama is probably going to give them all cash awards for keeping ICE out of their building. I guarantee you they're going to be rewarded for it. I guarantee maybe they'll have a state dinner for them at the White House. This is where we are today. This is why we are in such deep trouble. And this is not about xenophobia. The only phobia I have is phobia over what my own government is likely to do to our country because they've been bought, paid for, and bribed. Lunacy. This is madness. And, you know, having spent my entire adult life enforcing those immigration laws, getting injured numerous times enforcing the law, seeing other of my colleagues get very damaged, very injured, trying to enforce our immigration laws that serve as our first and last line of defense against international terrorists and transnational criminals, leaves me speechless. I don't even know what I'm supposed to say about it. But yet, turn on the TV and you will hear the argument, oh, those people that are anti-immigrant. No, folks, we're pro-enforcement. And if you're pro-enforcement of necessity, you are pro-immigrant. And here's why. The United States admits legally, and what legally means, think of the word legally, under the accordance of the laws that I support, that I enforced for 30 years. Under those laws, that's what makes it legal, we admit 1 million immigrants every year. That's more than the entire rest of the world combined. We naturalize hundreds of thousands of new citizens under the same laws. How on earth accuse somebody who supports the laws whereby aliens legally immigrate of being anti-immigrant? And the most likely victims of the crimes committed by foreign criminals, and not just within the Latino community, the Russian community, the Middle Eastern community, the African community, the Caribbean community, the European community, the Italian mob, the Israeli mob, I don't care. The most likely victims are the members of the ethnic immigrant communities, the Asian organized crime groups of Chinatowns around the country. This isn't about Latinos. So it's lie after lie, it's accusation after accusation, and it's censorship and the implementation of Orwellian newspeak. This is not about being politically correct. And this is why I believe you see this frantic reaction to Donald Trump. And I'm not saying I'm supporting Trump per se, but I will tell you, when I look at what the Republicans have to say and I listen to the nonsense being spewed by Hillary and Bernie, oh, the xenophobes. Really? I want to know if they allow strangers into their home at night. I want to know if when Hillary was in the White House, how she would have felt about an intruder hopping the fence at the White House. This isn't xenophobia. We are living in a very perilous era, folks, and somebody has got to restore some integrity to the system. The problem is that the lack of integrity to be found within the immigration system is a reflection of the lack of integrity of our political supposed leaders. Therein lies the problem. They are listening to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, arguably the most anti-American organization I could think of. It's about flooding America with foreign workers, foreign students, and foreign tourists at the cost, and the cost is the well-being of America and Americans and American lives. Folks, this has to stop. Please get involved. If you like what the information that I'm providing to you, let your friends and neighbors know. Become part of my Bucket Brigade of Truth. And remember that democracy is not a spectator sport. Please go to Front Page Magazine, capsweb.org, The Social Contract, and, of course, my website, michaelcutler.net. Have a great weekend, everybody. I look forward to seeing you again right here next week on the Michael Cutler Hour. So long for now.